One thing we realized in the church planting world across virtually all denominations, there has been a value that church plants be financially self-sufficient in two, three, 4 years is usually the number, sometimes five. And what we've come to realize is that has, by virtue of the fact that they want them to be financially self-sufficient in that time period, that has eliminated planting churches in some of our most challenged communities.
Welcome to Discipleship Conversations, a Mission Alive podcast with Jeremy Hoover and Stephen Carazell.
Welcome, everybody, to Season 3 of Discipleship Conversations. We are really excited about this season. You maybe have heard that we've made a transition. We are now a Mission Alive podcast, and we are excited to be joining with that organization and the things that they are doing to help spread the mission of God around North America. This season, we are going to be talking with many of the church planters in Mission Alive to hear their stories in hopes that their stories about church planting will inspire you to think about how you can better serve the mission of God in your own context, whether that's the church you're in, the neighborhood that you live in, or perhaps even the place you work. Maybe you'll even be inspired to talk with Mission Alive about how you might be able to become a church planter with them. Stephen, glad to have you on board for a third season. Why don't you just go ahead and reiterate for everyone who you are? And why don't you go ahead and also let us know your affiliation with Mission Alive?
Thanks, Jeremy. Yes, I'm excited to begin a third season. My name is Stephen Carazell. I've been in ministry just about 30 years, full-time ministry for just about 30 years on traditional churches, currently serving as associate minister at Alta Mesa Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. And I have been associated with Mission Alive for a number of years in different ways. First, by being a student in undergrad and in grad school of the founder, Galen Van Rienen, before he started Mission Alive and after he started Mission Alive. I was also part of a church that did a Mission Alive church plant many years ago. And so those are some connections. More recently, I've got connected to Mission Alive through the coaching certification and discipleship cohorts, which is where we met in a cohort. And I did the coaching right before then. And both of those things have been ongoing, active things in my life since then. And so I believe in the people of Mission Alive, and I have enjoyed my relationship with them and learning from them as well. Jeremy, how about you? You've been part of Mission Alive as well.
Yeah, I think I've been affiliated with them for probably a decade, maybe even a little bit longer. I think our listeners would recognize that I am a church planter with Mission Alive in Sarnia, Ontario, in Canada. Previous to that, I had worked in traditional churches as the preacher for about 15 years. I met, I came in contact with Mission Alive through Galen Van Rienen. Of all things, I was just on a journey to try to understand discipleship and evangelism and outreach. And I guess we were on a Facebook group together. I asked a question and he made a comment and invited me to a phone conversation, which we had, and one thing led to another. And he invited me into a discipleship cohort. And then he invited me to co-lead one with him. And then as Galen began to phase out of Mission Alive, Todd began interacting with me, the executive director, Todd Vogt. And I continued the relationship with him. I've co-led discipleship cohorts with Todd. I'm currently in a level 3 cohort. These are things that we'll talk more about with Todd in the conversation upcoming. But I've also gone through the coach training, the certification training, and that has paid tremendous dividends in my ministry. I'm thankful for Mission Alive, not just for the work that they do in North America, but they've been, that the whole organization has been a personal blessing in my life. And I think that you and I are not just excited, but we're honored to have Todd Vogt with us today. And Todd is the executive director of Mission Alive. So we want to take this time to welcome Todd to the show and begin our conversation with him. So Todd, thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you're doing and go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on today. It's been a great week and I'm excited to kind of end it this way. So I'm Todd Vogt. I am the executive director of Mission Alive. And we are a church planting organization that focuses on planting churches in North America. I am the husband of Candace, father to Hannah and Lucas, and live here in the Dallas area. I'm not sure what else you guys want me to say.
Well, I think that's good, good start. But why don't you tell us how you got connected with Mission Alive?
So Mission Alive got started in 2004. Dr. Galen Van Reenen, who was a missions professor at ACU, left ACU, took early retirement and moved here to Dallas and started Mission Alive with the vision of planting churches in North America. A couple of years later, At the time I was preaching for a church in the New Orleans area. And in 2005, Katrina hit New Orleans and our church went into disaster relief mode. And during that time, I thought it would be a good time to talk about church planting in New Orleans. So I invited Galen with Mission Alive to come down and talk to us about that. One thing led to another, and he invited my wife and I to join the Mission Alive team. And, you know, post-Katrina New Orleans, the schools were not doing great. And so we took it as an opportunity to get our kids into better schools, a more stable situation. And honestly, it just felt like a calling right into Mission Alive. And so I've been with Mission Alive since June of 2007. We have planted, I don't know how many dozens of churches since 2004. In 2015, Galen began to make moves toward his second retirement. And so I stepped into the role of the executive director. And so I've been doing that since January of 2015. So that's kind of my history with Mission Alive.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that information. Mission Alive goes way back. And as Jeremy and I have talked before, we've been connected in various ways and various people, and they were all a lot of special people that are connected with Mission Alive. You talked about the church planting, and I know Mission Alive is involved with a lot of different things. So maybe we just talk a little bit about what all Mission Alive does, and maybe we could start a little bit by going a little bit deeper with the church planting process. What does it look like to plant a church, and how does Mission Alive go about doing that?
Well, first and foremost, we are a missional church planting organization. Missional is in our name. If anybody kind of runs Mission Alive together, they see missional in there. So we started as a ministry committed to a missional view of the church, that God has a mission in this world. He's up to something, and he calls us to participate in his mission. It's his mission. It's not ours. But we get to participate. And it's one of the amazing things about God. One way his sovereignty is seen so clearly is that he invites us, weak and flawed human beings, to join him in his mission to bring about the holistic restoration of the entire world. And so we've been committed to that since the beginning of Mission Alive. We've done a lot of things over the years, but we are first and foremost a church planting organization. We believe deeply that people that are not participating in Christian community, that is to say, they're not going to church, They're not likely to go to church with one of our established churches, that we need to plant fresh, new, creative, innovative churches that will embody the gospel in a way that will get the attention of our unchurched family, friends, and neighbors. So that's really what we're about. And we've been about that for a very, very long time, going all the way back to 2004. That's really our deepest commitment. We believe that every generation's responsibility, every generation of Christians has the responsibility to reimagine what does the gospel look like if you dress it up in this contemporary culture, whatever that contemporary culture is, right? It's going to be 50 years from now, it's going to be different than it is today. Well, if you frame the gospel in terms of whatever culture you're in and at whatever time you are, you always have to ask that question over and over and over again. None of us ever arrives at the perfect universal expression of the gospel. And so the job of every generation is to reimagine what the gospel looks like for their cohorts, for their friends and family and neighbors. And so that's what we try and do. We actually try and train church planters to think a lot like missionaries, and not so much like preacher pastors that think in terms of the worship gathering and the established congregation, but to think more like missionaries that are starting something completely from scratch. So that's really our deepest passion.
So how do you find your church planters? What do you do with them? And how do you find the communities in which you want to plant?
Good question. And there's really no one answer to either of those questions. I mean, how do we find church planters? Usually they find us. Usually God, he's always, you know, at least two or three steps ahead of all of us, right? And God has been stirring in somebody's heart or in a group of people in their heart for something in their own neighborhood or in their own community. And God starts stirring in them, and eventually they can't resist it anymore. And they start looking around for who can help us do this thing that we feel God is calling us to do. Sometimes that's just a couple. Sometimes that's a whole team of people. On occasion, we have a church leadership that will reach out to us, and they will have been given a vision by God for some new church somewhere. And they come to us and they say, can you help us find somebody that will lead this thing that we believe God is calling us to do? And so we find our church planters that way. Sometimes we find church planters right out of the harvest. Some of our longer-term church planters, they are trying to raise up church planters within their congregations or through their ministries. And so it really happens in all kinds of ways. Even through we have a outfitters residency ministry within Mission Alive that looks for summer interns or 1 or 2 year apprenticeships with one of our church plants. And so the reason we do that is that we would like to see if God is calling some of these young emerging leaders early so that we can kind of walk with them as they grow and develop in their life and in their ministry. So that's one way that we're trying to find the future, you know, future church planters. So you also asked about how do we find these locations? Well, in the case of people that just come to us, sometimes they come to us and they just say, I think God's calling me to plant a church, but I have no idea where. We can work with that. Sometimes we have people come and say, no, I think God wants me to plant a church right here. And they already have a very specific place in mind. And then sometimes we have a church that will come, and usually they have a place in mind, but not always. Sometimes the church that is wanting to plant a church just feels called to church plant, but they don't have any place in mind. And we work with all of those. And so in many ways we can end up acting like, matchmakers, right? You know, between leaders that are being called into church planting and churches and locations, sometimes we kind of play that matchmaker role. The other way we find a location is that about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, we began to develop a focus on planting churches in marginalized communities. One thing we realized in the church planting world across virtually all denominations, there has been a value that church plants be financially self-sufficient in two, three, 4 years is usually the number, sometimes five. And what we've come to realize is that has, by virtue of the fact that they want them to be financially self-sufficient in that time period, that has eliminated planting churches in some of our most challenged communities. Because marginalized communities, urban communities, communities of poverty, they don't have the financial resources. Even if you are tremendously successful at gathering numbers of people, they simply don't have the financial resources for the church to be financially self-sufficient in 2, 3, 4 years. And that's another tragedy, right? That's another tragedy that the church has ignored in the face of some of our friends and neighbors of color. And so we want to do something about that. So we've identified 100 marginalized communities throughout North America that we believe are ripe and ready for a new creative, innovative kind of church plant. And a church plant, maybe not in their community, but a church plant near their community that will then go in and come alongside that community and help them out. So we've identified 100. Our top five right now are an area in the Houston metro area called Gulfton. It's kind of an inner urban kind of church plant. Another one is Bessemer, Alabama. It's on the outskirts of Birmingham. It's another very urban, high crime kind of area. Calgary, Alberta has got an awful lot of immigrants that are coming into Calgary. So that's another kind of marginalized community. Holmes County, Mississippi is one of the poorest counties in the United States. And so we've identified that as a rural county. So some of our rural areas are some of the most poor areas in the country. And Holmes County, Mississippi, certainly qualifies as that. And then we've also identified a handful of university communities. And the one that's on our short list is University of California at Merced, where we would like to come alongside a church that already exists, plant a campus ministry as the state of California really invests in a new university there, or a new research center there at that university. So that whole area is growing like crazy. So that's our short list of marginalized communities. And there are different kinds of marginality, right? Sometimes it's poverty, sometimes it's culture, sometimes it's something else. So anyway, that's how we find our church plant locations.
That's good. So we talked before, you have a map of those communities.
We've created a Google map where somebody could go on and look and explore just the rural or they can look at a certain region, you know, by zooming in on the map or whatever. So yeah, those 100 communities are all on a Google map. We can provide you with a link to that.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that map in our show notes. I encourage you to go look at that map and just to see where those communities are. And if nothing else, I think maybe just praying over those communities and what God would do in each of those communities. So that's really good. I appreciate the way you've kind of laid that out, and really in a way that invites people to jump in, maybe to listen here to maybe what God's calling them to do. You mentioned the residency, this internship, you know, is that something that somebody contacts you about and say, hey, I'm interested in this, or how does that work?
Yeah. So we call them Outfitters Residency, the Outfitters Residency Ministry in the Mission Live. And within that, we have both summer internships and 12 to 24 month residencies. And summer internships are generally for college students that are in between, you know, in their summer in between semesters. Generally, but not always, those they're studying some kind of ministry or social work or something like that. And it's really a chance to, one, be helpful to a church plant, because church plants by nature don't have lots of human resources, certainly not human resources that understand anything about how to lead a church. It's summer internships with one of our church plants throughout. I think we've got 10 or 11 locations. And then we also have 12 to 24 month residencies. Those are for people that have graduated college, either with a bachelor's degree or with a master's degree if they've gone through seminary. And they want to spend a year or two with a church plant to really, one, invest in helping to start something, but two, really to explore their own calling and competencies for church planting. And all they've got to do is reach out to Mission Alive. We've got Roy Rhodes, who oversees that that ministry, and we'll connect them up if they have some interest in either a summer internship or a longer term residency.
Is that something that there are funds available for, or the expectation for the participant to raise support to participate in those things?
Well, like almost everything else in Mission Alive, it's both. we have some church plants that have some money that they set aside for summer interns or for long-term residents. Others simply don't have the resources. But regardless, we encourage all of them to at least do some fundraising, whether that's, you know, for quarter time or half time or full time, to do some fundraising. We also encourage both our summer interns and our longer term apprentices or residents, we call them, to consider getting a job in the community and being supported bivocationally. There is no doubt that the numbers are indicating that we are going to see an increase in bivocational ministry, even among people that are leading established churches. And so this is a good thing to try, but there's really even a better reason. And the better reason is, so often it's so easy for people in full-time ministry to become disconnected from the community. You spend all day, every day in the church offices. It's very easy to kind of miss the culture, miss the community. And so if you're working part-time at a Starbucks or at a restaurant somewhere or whatever, you're more engaged in the community, and it helps you understand and learn the community better. So we encourage that. We don't require it, but we do encourage it. So.
That's good. So people might want to get a hold of you or contact you via the Mission Alive website to ask about that specific program.
So Roy, R-O-Y, Roy at missionalive.org is a great email address to ask about that. Or they can just hit contact at missionalive.org. And that's a general email that goes out to a number of folks, and it'll eventually make it to Roy.
All right. Yeah. We'll put that in our show notes as well. Right. Just remembering that email. That's really good. Jeremy, you have a question here, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up, Todd, on the marginalized communities part. I know you and I have talked about that before. I love that focus, and I'm thankful that Mission Alive prioritizes that. I just wanted to clarify, maybe for some of our listeners, though, who may, as you said, they may have a vision for church planting that is not in a marginalized community. Mission Alive is still happy to work with that potential church planter, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. That's kind of where we got started, you know, years ago. This has been a more recent development to focus also on marginalized communities. So yeah, any church plant, you know, anywhere, we can come alongside and help with that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
That help, it involves, a training period. Is that correct? I don't think we've talked much about that.
Yeah, so the way we think of it is we kind of think in terms of the changing nature of our relationship with the church planter. And the way it, where it starts, we call it discernment, where the church planter and Mission Alive are kind of in a season of, you know, asking God, are you calling us to work together? The church planter saying, is the Mission Alive the right network for me to work with? Mission Alive is looking at the church planter or the potential church planter and saying, you know, God, are you really calling this person? And if so, are we the right organization for them to work with? Or should we encourage them to check out a different organization? So there's this discernment period, and we take quite seriously the practice of spiritual discernment. We have a guide on our website that's free to anybody that basically takes people through 6-7 steps on how to create a season of discernment, where you put together a discernment team and a discernment calendar, and you get very clear about what is it I'm praying about and how am I hearing from God in that. And at the end of the discernment period, you know, if both the church planter or the potential church planter and Mission Alive, we both feel like, you know, this seems right, then we shift into the assessment period. And we ask people to take some inventories, some, you know, personality and leadership style inventories. That culminates in an assessment retreat, which is a 2-day retreat where we do interviews and exercises, and all of that is aimed at figuring out what strengths do these people bring to the church planting prospect, and what limitations do they have that are going to need to be made up for along the way. And so at the end of the assessment period, we invite them, if it all goes well, we invite them into church planting with Mission Alive, which moves them into the training period. And training can last 6 months to 12 months. Sometimes it'll even last 18 months if there's some pre-work that we want them to do to kind of get them up to a certain level. So that's the training period. And we take them through what we think of as basic training, right? Like some basic training that all church planters need to go through, regardless of the model of church plant, the location, the culture, whatever. There's just some basic stuff that everybody needs to go through. But then we also develop context-specific training for church planters that, because they're working in a particular kind of area, they might need to develop in some ways that not all church planters need to develop. So we have kind of church planting or basic training, and then we have context-specific training. That context-specific training can go on for as long as it needs to, but the basic training usually lasts 6 to 12 months. Once they finish that, or even before they finish it, they start working with a coach, and every church planter that works with Mission Alive has got to work with a church planting coach for a minimum of the first 24 months of their church planting. So from the time they launch for 24 months, they've got a minimum of a monthly conversation. And the thing about a coach, and it, you know, for people that are not familiar with executive coaching, the thing about it is the coach's job is to come alongside the church planter and help them become successful at the strategy, at the goal that God has given them, at the church plant vision that God has placed on their heart. The coach's job is just to help them grow to the point where they're able to actually lead that thing. And, you know, it can be quite empowering to work with a coach. I know both of you guys are trained coaches, and that you guys know the power of coming alongside somebody and just watching God kind of open their eyes and open them up. And all of a sudden, man, they're running at twice the speed they were running, you know, just a few weeks before. So it's exciting to watch people work with coaches. And then after about 24 months, we kind of consider Mission Alive's direct input coming to an end, unless the church plant continues to want to work with planter, continues to want to work with a coach or get some additional training. But at that point, we invite them to become a partner with Mission Alive. And that's kind of the fifth stage of the relationship, in which we invite church planters to come and feed back into the process. So that's, you know, become a coach, become a discipleship cohort leader, become part of the training teams of people that are training church planters, so that Mission Alive is always raising up people, not only to plant churches, but to continue to expand and grow this church planting network. And that partnership also invites the church planters into this larger church plant network, where they have access to people that planted 10 years ago and can encourage them, you know, that whatever may be a frustration today, you're going to get past it and, you know, don't worry about it. And it's really helpful to have that kind of church plant community. Trying to church plant alone is one of the most lonely, difficult things you can possibly do. So we really want our church planters to live and work within a larger community.
So I hear two things in that. One is someone who is interested in church planting, there is a very good process of learning. Looks like a network of support for a number of years as this church planter goes through that process and plants. And so there's a they're not alone in that. That's one thing I hear. The other thing you hear is that just because I'm dissatisfied with the church I'm in, probably not a good idea just to go, hey, this place will help me start a church, my own church.
Great question, because we really want to be careful that we're not starting a church just to satisfy our own kind of individualistic desires for what church should be. A guy named Ed Stetzer, who's quite a well-known guy in the church planting world, years ago I was at a conference, and he had 300 or 400 would-be church planters in a session. And the way he worded it was, don't you dare go plant the church that's in your heart. Go plant the church that community needs. And those are two very different motivations. One is a motivation for church planting that comes out of my own brokenness, my own immaturities, and we all have them, right? Like, you know, it's not like I'm talking to somebody else, I'm talking to myself, right? The other is a motive that comes out of a kenotic posture, an other-centered posture, a self-emptying posture that says, I am going to work in such a way that we plant a church that resonates with these people, whether or not it particularly resonates with me. That's the true kenotic posture of church planting.
Good. So you dropped a word there, kenotic. Self-emptying is a good way of
that's the expressing that term, too, right?
The Philippians 2, yes.
Right. 5-11 or there, where it talks about, yes, Jesus emptied himself and became nothing, taking on the very nature of a servant. The word there is kenosis. And it means he emptied himself of all that was about him and all of his privilege and all of his personal power. He didn't exercise his divinity at every turn, right? But he did what was necessary for other people. And that's truly the call of a spiritual leader, is to not lead for your sake, but lead for others' sake.
Stephen, we're going to pause our episode there. What we did was we recorded a longer conversation with Todd that we're going to break into two parts. But as a way of wrapping up, Todd talked extensively with us about church planting and the Mission Alive church planting process. And I've got to tell you, even though I've gone through that whole process and I'm intimately aware of the details of that, to hear him talk about it was really good. I can't say enough good, I think, about Mission Alive. But I think that the biggest takeaway for me in that conversation with Todd is their focus on marginalized communities. And we heard Todd say that's been a newer focus for them. It's certainly not brand new, but it's a direction that God's been leading them into. It's one of the areas that I serve in. And I to hear Todd share that many new church plants, because of the necessity of having to self-fund themselves within a short period of time, that requires them to self-select the kind of people that they target. And it leaves folks in these marginalized communities really without a chance when it comes to a church plant. And so the idea of looking at one of these communities and going through the Missional Life training as I have, and thinking about what does it look like for a church to be incarnated in that context? What does it look like? It doesn't have to be traditional, but what does it look like? That for me was a big takeaway. What about for you?
Well, I was impressed by the thoroughness of the church planting process. I guess probably my favorite thing is that church planting is not something one does out of discontent, out of a sense that I can do it better than my experience has been, whether I'm on staff or just a member, a volunteer participant in a church. I think sometimes people go that route, that there's a sense of healthiness that they're looking for in a calling toward that, and a purposefulness about our own lives and about where that church plant is landing. The contextual nature of the church plant and what it needs to be. It's not, as he said, as he was quoting Stetzer, don't plant the church of your heart, plant the church that the community needs. Let God call that out of our lives and set us in the place where we need to be. That was really good. And I appreciate that very much. I think that would be helpful for a lot of people to hear.
Yeah.
So we're thankful for you listening this time. And that was part one. And we'll look forward to picking up the conversation at that point for part two in our next episode.
Thanks for listening to this discipleship conversation. We invite you to share this episode and tune in next time for another conversation. We also invite you to subscribe and rate the podcast through your favorite podcast app. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments and questions to media@missionalive.org. Check out the episode show notes and learn more about the podcast and other Mission Alive media resources at missionalive.org/media. Intro and outro music is by audionautics.com. Mission Alive works to bring about the holistic transformation of marginalized communities through starting and renewing innovative churches that address the most challenging issues faced by their neighbors. Learn more about what we do and how to connect at missionalive.org.